supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
It will give hope to the people that protested this weekend. It will give hope to the children of Parkland and the families of Sandy Hook.
That's New Jersey Assembly Majority Leader Democrat Lou Greenwald after the State House acted today to strengthen New Jersey's already strict gun laws. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Let's take up these measures with Matt Friedman, New Jersey reporter for Politico. Matt, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Hi, thanks, Dave.
So Greenwald says this is common sense legislation. Let's look at these six bills that were passed today.
Sure. Some are more far-reaching than others. A couple of these bills are really just technical changes to the state's gun laws. Some of them are a bit more far-reaching. I'd say probably the most far-reaching and controversial of these bills, arguably, is one that would reduce the amount of ammunition that magazines are permitted to hold from 15 rounds to 10, with a few exceptions and a little bit of grandfathering in for guns that are already that are not modifiable and already have that. Republicans really didn't like that one. I don't think there was a single Republican vote for it. Governor Christie actually vetoed that same bill twice over the last several years, the first time in the aftermath of the Sandy Hook shooting. The other two really significant bills would both make it easier to seize firearms from someone who's been dubbed a danger to themselves or other people. One would make it easier for family members to sort of file something at the police station, and the police would seize the gun, and there'd be hearings as to whether there should be a restraining order on this person owning a gun for a year, restraining orders that could be renewed a year later. There's also one that would require mental health professionals, if they believe that someone is a danger to themselves or others, to basically report that person to the police so they can check if that person owns a gun or has a permit to buy a gun.
I imagine there could be, though, some debate over how that determination would be made by a mental health professional. What would the threshold be?
Yeah, currently these certain professionals, psychologists, actually even family counselors, are obligated to warn potential victims if a person is a threat to them. This would obligate them to also warn the police, from my reading of the bill.
Democratic Governor Phil Murphy has already signaled that he would sign the legislation into law, but first it has to get through the state Senate. What is its likely fate there?
It does look like it's going to move. I have heard some concern from gun control advocates that Senate President Sweeney may be slow-walking it a bit. Years ago, Sweeney initially had actually the magazine limit bill that we talked about. Senate President Steve Sweeney at first opposed that. He did have a change of heart on it and eventually passed the legislation later, only to see it vetoed. And so I think, there's some hesitation there, but Sweeney insists that he's going to do these bills.
As to Greenwald's contention, again, that this will send a message to the rest of the country, this does come off the massive weekend demonstrations in the nation's capital and across the country. And, of course, after legislation was passed in Florida, though it was a much heavier lift in Florida, which does not have the same strict gun laws as New Jersey. Do you get a sense that this is momentum building?
You know, the difference here is this is a state that's naturally inclined. It's a purple to blue state that is very densely populated and generally has very strong support for strict gun laws. New Jerseyans, in general, there aren't a lot of gun rights activists, as in any other state, but the bulk of the population is not clamoring to loosen our gun laws, and usually proposals to tighten a bit tend to have support here. The thing is, over the last 8 years, we had a Republican governor who wanted to run for president, and a lot of his decisions were made politically on the basis, how will this look to Republicans in New Hampshire, to Republicans in Iowa?
Is there any sense that the NRA, though, may take this up in the court of law, in addition to the court of public opinion, to try to thwart it?
There's been talk that there will be lawsuits by some of the people whose guns were seized because of the lack of due process, and it's possible, though I don't know, that some gun rights groups might help those people out. They have sued over New Jersey gun laws before, and up to this point, haven't really been successful in overturning any that I can think of off the top of my head, any major ones.
Matt, thanks so much for joining us once again to provide insight.
All right, thank you, Dave.
Matt Friedman, New Jersey reporter for Politico. There's plenty of angst and speculation in Washington about what might ensue if President Donald Trump were to fire Special Counsel Robert Mueller and end his investigation. WHYY's Dave Davies asked the six congressional representatives in Philadelphia and its Pennsylvania suburbs, three Republicans and three Democrats, how they would react if the president sent Mueller packing. Here's his report.
Local Republicans and Democrats agree that firing Robert Mueller would be a bad thing. They may differ a bit on just how bad and what should be done about it. Here's Chester County Republican Ryan Costello.
At this moment in time, knowing what I know, if Mueller were fired, I would take issue with that. I think he should be allowed to proceed with the investigation as he has been charged to do by the Department of Justice.
So Costello, a Republican, would take issue with Mueller being fired. What would a Democrat do?
If the president were to fire the special counsel, Robert Mueller, I would introduce an article of impeachment.
That's Brendan Boyle, who currently represents a district that includes parts of Montgomery County and Northeast Philadelphia.
That would constitute obstruction of justice. It would be an exact replay of what President Nixon did in October of 1973, which has been subsequently referred to as the Saturday Night Massacre.
In that famous episode, Nixon's Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General defied his order to fire Special Watergate Counsel Archibald Cox, resulting in both men's departure. Soon after, articles of impeachment were introduced against Nixon. He resigned the following year. Bucks County Republican Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, a former FBI agent, says he thinks Mueller's investigators will be allowed to continue their work. But if Mueller were fired?
Well, let's cross that bridge when we get there. I mean, he's being allowed to do his work now. I've gotten no indication whatsoever that that's going to change.
As things stand now, Mueller can be fired only by the Justice Department and only for cause. If Trump were to get rid of Attorney General Jeff Sessions and bring in a replacement determined to axe Mueller, he could do it. Some in Congress think the president simply shouldn't be able to fire a prosecutor who is investigating him. There's bipartisan legislation that would give Mueller the right to contest his dismissal in federal court, but it hasn't gotten far. Philadelphia Democrat Dwight Evans says he's on board.
I signed on to a discharge petition to support the special counsel integrity. It's called House Resolution 4669, which would prohibit the removal of the special counsel without cause.
Costello says if Congress wants to rethink statutes governing special prosecutors, it shouldn't do it now.
If we should make changes to the independent counsel, it should be done at the conclusion of this investigation, not in connection with this investigation. I think that would only further politicize or poison an already very controversial situation.
Costello's one of three congressional representatives from the Delaware Valley who've decided not to seek re-election this year. Two others, Philadelphia Democrat Bob Brady and Delaware County Republican Pat Meehan, didn't respond to several requests for comment on the prospect of Mueller's firing. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Across Pennsylvania, millions of drivers have a mechanic test their vehicle's emissions every year. Cars that pass get a sticker. Owners of cars that fail the emissions test must attempt to fix the problem. Two decades after these tests began, some are questioning whether the program is still necessary. State Impact Pennsylvania's Amy Sisk reports.
Express Transmission in Monaca keeps busy fixing the vehicles of Beaver County residents. On the side, owner Scott Reynolds does emission tests, maybe 10 a month.
First thing you do is you got to put a gas cap test on there, and that would be this tool here.
He attaches a circular adapter to the car's gas cap to make sure it's venting properly. Next, he connects a cord to the car's computer to catch any codes indicating a problem with the emission controls. That information goes to the state.
There's a record that says, hey, this thing failed because the oxygen sensors are bad, or no, it didn't fail at all, it passed.
These tests are required in some Pennsylvania counties, 25 in all, from Beaver County to Philadelphia County. They're meant to reduce smog and help the state comply with the Federal Clean Air Act. Republican State Senator Elder Vogel represents Beaver County.
So it's just a $30, $40, $50 cost that everybody has to have once a year that we don't believe is necessary anymore.
Emission controls are better on newer cars, and most vehicles pass. Statewide, the failure rate is below 3%, according to the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. Vogel pushed legislation to study the program last year, along with Republican Senator Wayne Lingerholtz. Lingerholtz represents Cambria County. It once fell short of federal ozone standards, but its designation changed in 2008.
We are compliant, yet our county and our citizens are still burdened with this oppressive regulation that hits their pocketbooks.
The study is looking at ending vehicle emission testing for some of the state's less populated counties. It's scheduled to wrap up this fall. Changing the program is not as simple as passing a new law. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency has to sign off.
A program that is still providing benefits, we can't just end.
Rob Altenberg is with the environmental group Penn Future.
If we do end it, we would have to backfill it with something else to make up for the lost emission savings.
He acknowledges most cars pass, but points to the few that puff dark smoke out their tailpipes.
What you need is a program that makes sure you do capture these high-emitting vehicles, because one high-emitting vehicle can emit an awful lot of emissions.
In a statement, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection said it's difficult to determine the effectiveness of the program because the state cannot measure the emissions from each vehicle. But some groups really want to know if the program is working. Ted Leonard is with the Pennsylvania AAA Federation.
I think the program, is, you know, being two decades old, needs to be looked at and see if there's some things that we can fine-tune.
Back in Monaca, Scott Reynolds' shop sits along a busy highway. Well, he says his business would not take a big hit if the program disappeared. Shops down the road run several hundred tests a month. They keep the bulk of the money and pay a small fee to a vendor. None of it goes to the state.
I love these guys. They're great friends of mine, and this is where this is how they feed their family. So in that aspect, for them, I would say keep. But for me, it'd be nay. I'd say get rid of it.
Because, like all shop owners, he has to deal with upkeep. This is particularly troublesome in Philadelphia, which runs an additional test on a small number of older cars. Ross Colkett would like to see that requirement change. He represents auto repair shops with the Automotive Service Association of Pennsylvania.
Many of the companies that actually made those machines have gone out of business, and in some cases, if there's a major failure, the owners of the machines cannot get parts.
Plus, he says shops like Reynolds will soon require new equipment. Reynolds is afraid that will cost him more than $10,000.
I just can't do it at this size of a shop. I'm not big enough to, you know, concur those costs.
He might get out of the program anyway, regardless of what the state decides to do. Amy Sisk, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Cristo Rey, a Catholic school in North Philadelphia, has a pilot curriculum that will turn students into pilots. Drone pilots. Throughout this school year, the students have been building toward a launch date for their fleet of homemade drones. WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Aaron checked in on their progress.
Nothing actually left the ground on Monday morning. Instead, students spent their time furiously typing code and loading it onto three-wheeled objects that kind of resembled remote control cars.
And then you have to tell both wheels to stop, to then tell both wheels to do the same, another thing.
It's all part of a progression, explains senior Maria Tejada Cáceres.
This car is going to help us build the drone that would be done by the final senior year.
The year actually began with light bulbs.
So they first started with basic electricity.
Eva Porter runs Cristo Rey's Autonomous Systems Engineering Academy, an idea developed and funded by the auditing firm Deloitte and an education nonprofit called Base 11.
They hooked up a light bulb with a couple of wires and, you know, a couple of AA batteries, and they just learned about current.
From there, they tackled coding, 3D printing, and woodwork. All the skills needed to build a moving modern object. Along the way, they picked up insight into how things actually work.
Just like a TV that you break and you get to see the things inside. Like it all makes sense now. Like you see all the wires and the little pretty shiny things. It all makes sense.
Base 11 focuses on getting underrepresented groups like women and minorities into STEM fields. Cristo Rey makes sense as a guinea pig for this new curriculum because 99% of its students are students of color and 65% are women. Maria Tejada Cáceres is both and is starting to think engineering, not nursing, may be her path.
Which is why I applied to all my colleges undecided so that I can take a little bit of every course to figure out because this is, like, so cool. Maybe I would like to do it in the future.
And all that started with a literal light bulb moment. Avi Wolf-Manarant, WHYY News.
We're getting a sense of the size of the universe. Let's get an accounting with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Billions and billions, Derek?
You know, I think Carl Sagan would be shocked and amazed himself to come to the realization that modern-day astronomers have come to about the number of galaxies that appear to be in the universe. Recently, an astronomer, astrophysicist actually at Space Telescope Science Institute, Mario Livio, was thinking about this and has put out what is now known as an acceptable range for the estimated number of galaxies in the universe, somewhere between 100 billion and 200 billion galaxies.
Not stars.
But collections of stars, galaxies.
But it does beg the question, what if there were, instead of 200 billion, 500 billion or 800 billion? Does it also mean that there is a limit to the size of the universe?
Yes. No. There's a lot of work to be done in there still. Well, as we look at what we see in the sky, several things are true. We can count galaxies in regions of the sky and get an estimate that way of how many galaxies, you know, could be there in the universe as we understand it. Then we can also look at how the universe itself seems to be expanding, and that's looking at distant galaxies and noticing their what's called recessional velocity, the speed with which they seem to be moving away from each other, and that can help us calculate some about what the volume of the universe could be and what the population must be.
That matter is neither created nor destroyed, does that imply that all this inventory, all this stuff was present at the onset, at the Big Bang?
That's the way the theory goes, is that all of this matter in a different form was there when it all began and then turned into what we now know as this matter. So that even tells you something about the nature of what that stuff was way back then, because it had to contain everything that we know of now in some form or another, along with all the forces awarded to this universe, which is, of course, the holy grail of astrophysicists to best understand the actual beginning point of everything we know of as the universe.
With holidays ahead this week, what's the correlation again between the nearby stuff of the solar system and our calendar?
Well, it's interesting how all this locks together because, you know, there's the solar calendar, the lunar calendar, the Julian calendar, the Gregorian calendar, all of these different calendars, which in many ways, several of the ones that I've mentioned so far, are human constructs that help us mark time and are unrelated to, not exactly related to the solar calendars or the lunar calendars. And where that leaves us is this. This coming Sunday is Easter, and that has very, very strict laws and sort of constraints for which Sunday it can actually be. So the simple way that we always describe this is that it's the first Sunday after the first full moon following the vernal equinox. So we had the first day of spring last week. As it turns out, Friday this week is the first full moon. So the immediately following Sunday, April 1st, happens to be Easter. Now, the coincidence of the two, April Fool's Day and Easter, is sort of on the rare side. The last time it happened was 1956, not that long ago. Next time is 2029, then 2040, and then there's a 68-year break when it doesn't occur again until the year 2170. So enjoy the confluence this year.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller. Newsworks Tonight.